Hello, ladies and gents. This is Chris Lester from the Metamore City Podcast, winner of the Podcast Peer Award for Best Production, Parsec Award finalist for Best Speculative Fiction Short Form, and Best Speculative Fiction Magazine or Anthology Series. Alas, I will not be at Dragon Con this year to celebrate my victory over my nemesis in person. Oh, you don't mind picking up that Podcast Peer Award for me, do you, Patrick? There's a good chap. Anyway, you're listening to episode 30 of what we hope will be next year's Parsec Award-winning podcast novel, Murder at Avedon Hill, by P.G. Holyfield. Hey, wait a minute. Who wrote this? Making the Cut will be eligible for Best Novel next year, too, and he thinks I'm gonna... Damn you, Holyfield!
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield.
Well, hello there, folks. P.G. Holyfield here, back from Dragon Con and ready to rock and roll. It was an awesome weekend, and I would love to chat about it here, but you're here to listen to Chapter 30. We had a lead-in from my nemesis, Chris Lester. I've got a short story so far coming up for you from Seth Harwood, and I'll have a Karen Line call coming up after the chapter. Ow. And actually, I'm here with Cannonball. As some of you know through Twitter, that's my two-year-old daughter. Her code name would be Cannonball, her superhero name, because she bounces off of everything. And she's here with me as I record this intro. I do want to say, I'm going to come with you in a minute. I just have to finish recording this. Is that okay? Can you say hi? I'm Cannonball. Okay, well, let me finish then. I do want to say one thing about Dragon Con. This year I got to meet several fans of Murder at Avedon Hill that hadn't contacted me before. It was a real pleasure to meet you all, and in most cases, party with you. And please, don't be strangers. Email me and let me know how you're doing. And call the Karen line if you like what you're hearing over the next few weeks. I especially want to say hi to Jennifer, Adam, and Martin. Thanks for the good times, and to that nice girl from the Devil's Panties webcomic table who gave me one of those fan moments that I'm usually guilty of around other people. Thanks for making my weekend special. Lastly, I want to thank Evo, his wife Sheila, Andrea, the Vicar, Soupbone, JR, and the Stringers for making this a great convention. I know I'm missing a whole hell of a lot of people here, but I'll save that for my blog or later on. I'll catch you guys on the flip side, because right now we have the Palms Daddy himself, Seth Harwood. Enjoy.
I want to take off my sock.
You want to take off your sock? Well, you go right ahead.
Hey, this is Seth Harwood, and I am so pleased to be here to present the story so far for episode 30 of Murder at Avedon Hill. You might have heard my name around the podosphere a little bit here and there. I'm Seth Harwood. I have a couple of websites now, SethHarwood.com and The Crime Wave, C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You can check out either one of those. The Crime Wave provides crime short stories, a new one to you every week from today's best up-and-coming crime contemporary authors. And SethHarwood.com is where I'm releasing my new podcast novel, kind of a prequel to Jack Wakes Up, and a little bit of a departure from the Jack Palms crime series, but still in a crime vein, Young Junius. Come on over, check out one of those. Maybe you don't usually listen to crime. You got the mystery here from PG. I know you're listening to the horror and the science fiction. Give crime a chance. That's all we're saying. Give crime a chance. But you know what? Here's the story so far. Aramis Cragan has been hired by Lord Avedon to investigate the murder of his house mistress and closest advisor, Greta Platt. Aramis soon discovers that Lord Avedon has been hiding, that his son, Edward, has been turned into a vampire, and that Lord Avedon's primary goal is to prove that his son wasn't Greta's murderer. In Chapter 29, Aramis confronts Lane Nichols, the vampire that killed Edward Avedon. Before he can attempt to capture the creature, Lane escapes through a secret door in the library's basement, leaving Aramis to deal with Lord Avedon and Father Joras by himself. And now, Episode 30 of Murder at Avedon Hill.
Chapter 30, Flight. The icon of Caelan, child of destruction. Theroic drove the Torim to the far-flung corners of Cairn. Their only exit from Cairn was straight into Caelan's abyss. Tales of the Children.
Aaron ran down the steps to the library's basement and found Aramis frantically searching the wall opposite the staircase. What happened? Father Joras pushed past Aaron, nearly knocking him down. He held his holy symbol of Arjun high above his head. Powerful light flooded the room, far brighter than the light from the sconces along the walls.
You faced a vampire master alone? Brave. And foolish, monk.
Aaron ran forward to reach them. Joras, how could you not realize she was a vampire? Joras ignored the question.
She went this way, did she?
Unlike their previous encounters, Joras had attached the holy symbol of Arjun to the end of a staff. He held the staff in front of him, sweeping it across the floor.
There you are.
Aaron couldn't make out any markings on the floor, but Joras clearly saw something that interested him. The cleric approached the wall and extended his staff until it nearly touched the stonework.
You'll not escape me so easily, bitch.
He pressed several stones with his hands. A grating sound accompanied movement along the wall. An uneven door of stones and mortar slid back from the wall, just wide enough to fit through. Aramis moved forward, but Joras moved faster, pushing his way past the monk into a narrow passage that wound its way north. Aramis and Aaron followed. Aramis repeated Aaron's query to the back of Joras' head.
Why were your senses blind to Lane Nichols?
Father Joras, staff before him, was nearly running through the roughly hewn passage.
I rarely spoke to the creature during my time here. She and her books never interested me in the least, and she obviously never visited my temple.
Aaron was surprised at his excuses. After a moment, however, Joras slowed his pace, visibly upset. When the priest looked back at them, his eyes had lost their fire.
I don't know. She fooled me.
Admitting his limitations seemed to bring the fire back quickly.
She must have some sort of magics working for her. I can track an undead creature within a league of me.
He looked back to the ground and noticed something. His own failures forgotten. Joras reached a fork where the tunnel continued north or angled west. Joras turned back to Aramis.
This way!
He lowered his staff to the ground. Father Joras' holy symbol was even brighter now, allowing them all to see in every direction.
What is he doing?
Aaron had stuck his head over Aramis' shoulder. The
power of his holy symbol and his connection to Arjun allows him to see things we cannot. Where she touched the wall earlier.
Father Joris growled and began running down the passage to the west.
And apparently, what direction she is heading now.
Soon the three men found themselves at the end of the western passage. Joris again used his holy symbol to see where Lane had touched the wall that blocked their advance. Moments later, they crossed another open doorway into a basement, a much smaller version of the library's lower level. Aaron watched Father Joris run forward and climb the only set of stairs in view. He could feel waves of power emanating from the cleric. To Aaron, Father Joris appeared much younger and more coherent than he had during their previous encounters. After his mentor quickly scanned the room they were in, Aaron followed Aramis up the stairs.
Father Joris is in his element, chasing an undead creature. He always claimed there was an undead presence here in Avedon Hill, and even in his failure, he's now been vindicated.
The two men found themselves in the only room of a small home. The decor was elegant yet sparse in some areas. There was a kitchen in one corner of the home, and a sitting area made up most of the rest of the room. There was no bed in sight. Nothing seemed out of place. Lane's home. Aramis nodded once. The front door stood open. Father Joris had obviously thrown it open and run off in pursuit of the vampire. Aramis moved quickly to the door. Aaron followed, and once Aramis determined which direction Father Joris had run, he turned to Aaron.
We need to go, now.
Aaron was confused by Aramis's increased urgency. Aramis must have noticed. As he began running southeast, Aramis yelled,
Cletus!
A short time later, they reached the town gate. The small door that Cletus used to greet visitors outside the town gate hung at an awkward angle, partially torn from its hinges. Cletus lay on the ground to the right of the door. Constable Ulrich stood over Cletus, fumbling around in an attempt to see if Cletus was still alive. Aramis ran over and pushed Constable Lewis out of the way. He placed two fingers on Cletus's neck, feeling for a pulse. Confirming Cletus was still alive, Aramis stood and addressed Constable Ulrich.
What did you see?
Ulrich looked at Aramis as if he had spoken in an old Anaran dialect.
I don't remember.
He pulled at his mustache as if he hoped that would provide some insight.
I was talking to Cletus, and then you pushed me away.
He blinked, seeming to notice Cletus for the first time.
By the children, what happened?
Aramis slapped Ulrich hard across the face. Ulrich blinked again and then shook his head.
What in Tuppen's name was that for?
He raised his arms and Aaron thought he might take a swing at Aramis. Aramis raised both hands in front of him, palms forward.
Ulrich, I need you to focus.
Ulrich lowered his fists and then waited for Aramis.
Ulrich, I need you to bring Constable Lewis and Lord Avedon here straight away.
Ulrich looked down and saw Cletus once again, seemingly for the first time.
Is that Cletus? Is he?
Aramis grabbed Ulrich by the arm and dragged him away from the gate.
Cletus will be fine. Do you remember what I need you to do?
Lewis and Lord Avedon.
Yes, they should be at the library. Thank you.
Aramis waited a few moments as the constable looked again over at Cletus.
Ulrich, go!
Ulrich ran off in the direction of the library.
What is this, Sir Aramis?
Lord Avedon stared at Aramis with a look of contempt, tinged with hope. Aramis sat with Cletus, who was now conscious and somewhat cognizant of his surroundings. The monk had been concentrating on Cletus's injuries, a stiff neck and a twisted knee, and had barely noticed the approach of Lord Avedon and the three constables. Aaron stood off to the left, ready with a chair once Cletus needed it. Aramis did not answer Lord Avedon directly, instead walking to Ulrich.
How does your head feel, Constable?
Ulrich initially pulled his head back from Aramis's outstretched hands, but he relented once he realized that the monk was only checking for injuries.
It's fuzzy.
Ulrich, have you been into Talik's ale again?
Aramis kept his focus on Ulrich. I had hoped the walk to the library and back would have been enough to clear your head. He pointed to the chair that Aaron held. "Sit. It will be some time before Cletus will be able to use it." Aramis turned to face Lord Avedon and Constable Lewis. "Head Constable, you updated Lord Avedon on what we found outside of town."
"Yes, and then I brought him and Tanner to the library."
"Friggin! Talk to me, not to Lewis."
Aramis finally addressed Lord Avedon. "I do not wish to repeat what you already know, sir. I meant no disrespect." The ruler of Avedon Hill opened his mouth once, and then closed it without speaking. "With knowledge acquired after interviewing Lane Nichols, Cletus, and Constable Lewis, and with the evidence found at the site of the book merchant's murder, I determined that Lane Nichols is a vampire. After I sent my student to retrieve Father Joris, and Lewis to find you, I proceeded to the library. Lane confirmed my suspicions, admitting to the murder of the book dealer. But before I could attempt to capture her, she heard Father Joris enter the library. She escaped through a secret tunnel in the basement of the building. Father Joris used his talents to follow the vampire through the tunnel. The passage ended at the home of Lane Nichols. Joris left us behind at her home, still in the vampire's trail. After quickly searching Lane's home, we followed Joris's trail and arrived here. We found Cletus on the ground and an incoherent Ulrich standing above him." Aramis stopped. Lord Avedon rolled one hand in a circular motion.
"And?"
"Those are the facts. Do you wish me to speculate further?"
"Yes, of course."
"I believe that Lane Nichols used her powers to disorient both Ulrich and Cletus. Possibly Cletus resisted her charms and was attacked as a result. Father Joris either arrived at this time or shortly thereafter. In either case, Lane escaped through the gate."
"And Father Joris?"
"I'm sure he followed her through the gate and is tracking her as we speak. Father Joris was an undead hunter long before becoming the temple cleric here at Avedon Hill. He will most likely continue this chase until either he is dead or she is destroyed." Lord Avedon mulled over Aramis's words.
"Sunlight harms vampires, does it not?"
"Lane Nichols is a vampire master, or mistress, if you will. Sunlight may weaken her, but it will not destroy her as it might a lesser vampire. However, the sun is most likely why Cletus and Ulrich are still with us."
"Then the mystery is solved."
Constable Lewis interjected.
"No, my lord. Lane Nichols could not have killed Greta Platt."
"But she is a vampire. She could have doubled back, entered the manor, and killed Greta."
Aramis shook his head. "I am sorry, Lord Avedon, but Lewis is correct. Even a vampire could not have covered the distance required, bypassed the town gate not once but twice, entered and exited Avedon Manor without being seen, and murdered Greta." Lord Avedon interjected.
"Twice?"
Lewis responded.
"Cletus's records show that Lane Nichols exited through the town gate two sykes before Greta was killed, and came back through the gate after her death."
"Maybe Cletus's records are wrong."
"My records are never wrong, Lord." Aramis turned to see a standing Cletus. "Vampire or not, she used this gate that night, twice, and the log is correct." Cletus closed his eyes and groaned a bit, but remained on his feet.
"Maybe she lied. Someone else killed the book dealer and she never really left town. She found another way into town and killed Greta, and then returned to enter through the gate, covering her tracks."
Aramis knew full well that Lord Avedon's attitude was tied to his desire to prove that his son Edvard had not killed Greta. "I am afraid the proof is in the basement of the library, and on this. Do you see the top item on the page?"
"Arlen Gricka. A-G-O. So?"
"It is Arlen Gricka's autobiography. And the O indicates that it was the original, written by Arlen's own hand. Lane has it." Lord Avedon handed the paper back to Aramis. His anger had seeped from him. Leaving only the defeated posture, Aramis had become used to since their arrival at Avedon Hill. Aramis pointed to his left, away from everyone at the scene. "If you please, Lord Avedon." The two men moved away from the others until Aramis was certain they would not be overheard. "As you have already guessed, we do not know who killed Greta Platt. But we have learned who attacked Edvard. The fire returned to Lord Avedon's eyes for a moment.
And you allowed her to escape?
Allowed is not the word I would choose, Lord Avedon. We had to assume that by the time we returned to town, Lane would have learned of the discovery of the book dealer's corpse. I took a chance confronting her alone because I could not allow Father Joris to join me. If he had been there, he would have learned of Edvard's condition. You know what his reaction would be. I also wanted a chance to capture her, instead of destroying her, which would have been impossible if I had faced her with Father Joris at my side.
Then why get him at all?
Because not bringing Father Joris in to help capture or destroy a vampire would have aroused too much suspicion. I still do not know who killed Greta Platt, but I knew Lane Nichols had not killed her, so I had to get Father Joris. I simply misjudged the cleric's speed and desire.
And how has Lane Nichols fooled Joris all this time?
I believe there is something about Lane that hid her undead nature from Father Joris's senses. It has to be something that is part of her nature, because at least a portion of this ability passed on to your son. Ever since we arrived, Joris has claimed to sense a vampire in Avedon Hill, but could not pinpoint its location. Edvard is this vampire. If Edvard did not possess at least some of this masking ability, I believe Father Joris would have beaten down the manor door by now. Aramis did not want to leave Lord Avedon without hope. I do have some good news.
Yes?
Lewis confirmed that the wound on the book dealer's neck, which was definitely from a vampire, did not resemble the much cleaner punctures on Greta's neck.
So you believe Edvard did not kill Greta?
It does not prove it, but my opinion is, if Greta had been Edvard's first kill, you would have found a much different corpse that night. Lord Avedon grabbed Aramis's hand and shook it.
Thank you, Aramis. Thank you.
The monk looked over and saw both Lewis and Aaron with incredulous looks on their faces. Aramis recalled Lane's last words to him. The monk placed his free hand on Lord Avedon's shoulder. You still cannot give Edvard the King's Crown potion. Not until we are sure. Even if Edvard never touched Greta, it does not mean he did not attack someone else before he reached the safety of Avedon Manor. Tears filled Lord Avedon's eyes. It had only taken a moment for Aramis to strip away the glimmer of hope he had just provided the man. When Marissa finishes the potion, keep it safe. We are close now. I will have the answers for you soon, Lord Avedon. I promise.
Everybody, this is Chris Lester from the Metamore City podcast at www.metamorecity.com. Over the last year, listeners like you have helped to take Metamore City from its quiet beginnings to become a real success, with a Podcast Peer Award for Best Production and 2 nominations in this year's Parsec Awards. Some of you have asked me how you can say thank you for the entertainment that the show has given you. Well, here's your chance. I've just started a new career as a biology teacher at Arise High School in Oakland, California. Arise is a charter school serving the high-need Fruitvale area, and this year we're badly short of funds for school supplies. We have a particularly urgent need for basic equipment for our biology classroom, including glassware, preserved specimens, and reagents for our lab experiments. We'd also like to be able to take the students on a canoe trip this fall with Save the Bay, a local nonprofit that educates people about environmental issues affecting the San Francisco Bay Area. If you can help, please go to arisebiology.chipin.com and leave a donation. That's arisebiology.chipin.com. Even if you can only give a few dollars, every little bit helps. Arise High School is a registered not-for-profit charitable organization, so all donations are tax-deductible. Thanks in advance for your help. Together, we can make sure that these students get the education they deserve.
From the writer and producer of Thesis a Fantasy. From the mind and voice behind The Adventures of Indiana Jim comes a new tale from a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Star Wars. Codename Starkeeper.
So you're Starkeeper, eh? Courier of sensitive cargo, known in circles both savory and unsavory, has 100 aliases and assumed names with transponder codes to match, intergalactic man of mystery. You're shorter than I expected.
What's your name?
Arborn Zell.
Don't give me that look, Morgan. I guess they told you my uncle was dead. That figures.
You don't want to get too close to me.
And why is that, Flyboy?
How touching.
Zell!
The answer is simple, miss. Because he's liable to get you killed.
Now give me the data card, or I'll take you and your ship with me.
It ends now.
What are you doing on my ship?
I have the badge. I ask the questions. What are you doing in Curtin Law's personal files?
It's a story of a galactic conspiracy.
So what you're telling me is that this Dark Jedi assassinated 3 members of the Corellian Council, and everyone is engaged in a massive cover-up?
Korsak, this is Horn. I need a unit to...
Ah!
The Dorne Hangar! Taking fire! Oh, no, you don't! Stop! Blast. Be advised, suspect fleeing in a sonar ship. Looks like a lone scout A, modified.
It's a story worthy of the name Star Wars.
There is much you do not know, my young apprentice.
Why do I suddenly have a very bad feeling about this? Sispawn, he's speeding up.
What?
The filtration plant. He's not gonna...
No!
You still have great value to my employer. Luckily, he won't mind if I break you myself first.
Not only will the Hutts take the blame, but the entire galaxy will fall into chaos.
Star Wars, codename Starkeeper. Available September 6th at podcast.indianajim.net.
VG Holyfield, this is Adam Keith. Just wanted to say it was great to meet you at DragonCon. I just got finished with episode 29. Didn't get a chance to listen to it until after DragonCon. And yeah, you're a dog for that's like that's definitely a cliffhanger for you. So hurry up and bring out the next episode. Thanks, man. Bye.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through Magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin MacLeod through his website at incompetech.com. Be sure to check out Murder at Avedon Hill at podiobooks.com, and if you are so inclined, please post a review at iTunes, at Podcast Pickle, or at podiobooks.com. Audio comments about the podcast can be left on the Cairn line at 704-315-5884. Or go to pgholyfield.com and click on the Call Me button to leave comments. This podcast is copyright 2007-2008 by P.G. Holyfield and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license.